Hi, everybody. The George Wilder Jr. Show is now on the air.
This is what I call freedom. Well, I wanna say, I wanna tell you, I wanna say it. When you can do what you wanna do and go where you wanna go and live where you wanna live and love who you wanna love and be what you wanna be. Join what you wanna join.
This is Chicago's finest internet radio show, making a world a better place, one show at a time. The George Wilder Jr. Show is now on the air. Take it away, Dad.
Well, thank you, Denver. Excuse me. Thanks, Denver. Welcome to the George Wilder Jr. Show, broadcasting live out of the city of Chicago. It's a beautiful day once again, folks. This is a gorgeous, beautiful day in the city of Chicago, and I hope that it's gorgeous wherever you are in the world. As you can tell, I'm feeling pretty good, pretty good. Last week was great, and we had some wonderful guests on the show. We had some wonderful, beautiful, uplifting conversations on the show, and I'm aiming, if I can say it, and I'm aiming to have this week. So my guest today is author Julian Rodriguez. I think we spelled his name wrong. On the marquee. Okay, we'll get that changed in a bit. Okay, And like I said, welcome to the George Wilder Jr. Show. We spelled, someone spelled Rodriguez wrong. Okay. I'm looking at it right now. So we got that change. And this show is all about, as you probably know already, about making the world a better place. That's all it is. About making the world a better place. And at least we're trying, but it's going to take more than just me or more than just another talk show or a television talk show or whatever. You know, it's going to take you, you know, and I've said this several times. You know, there are things going on in secret. These guys are trying to pass this, get their health care bill through Congress without anybody looking. I heard most of these guys in Congress trying to get a health care bill through Congress that they haven't even looked at, they haven't even read. I've heard this several times, that Congress, people in Congress in Washington, politicians, they pass bills without even knowing what the hell's in them. They don't even read. They just vote yes on it. You know, that's crazy. That's like you signing a contract or a document without reading it. I mean, even five-year-old children know this. You know, kids know this. Young adults know this. You don't sign anything unless you read it. And these grown-ass men, adults, old men, mostly of them white, if not all of them are white, they are trying to get these bills through Congress without even sneaking them through. And Mitch McConnell is saying that that they're not trying to sneak anything through, and we know that they are. They're just lying. And as they always do. I mean, they're aiding and abetting Donald Trump. That's a given. Because if this would have been Hillary Clinton, I mean, she would have been impeached already. If it had been a Barack Obama, he would have been impeached already. But the Republicans, they don't give a damn how you feel, how I feel. It's what they want. It's not about the people of the United States. It's about their party. It's about the party bosses. It's about the only thing that we can count on is some of these people who are pissed off at some of these Republicans at some of those town hall meetings get so angry that they'll vote their representative out of there and put someone in there that's going to represent their values and their interest. Right now, only thing we've got here, folks, is our vote. The only thing we want to make the world a better place, we want to change things that's going on in this country. You have to vote, and you have to vote the right way. Now, there's going to be a hell of a vote in this is Monday. There's going to be a hell of a vote tomorrow in Georgia. And I'm surprised to hear that Georgia is a red state, because I believe the most of the population in Georgia, if I'm not mistaken, is African-American. You know, so I don't know how in the hell it became a red state. It became a red state because people didn't vote. Whenever you don't vote, your vote is still, I preach this, if I can say preach. I've talked about this 2 or 3 years ago, and I'm going to say it again. If you don't vote, if you do not vote, your vote is still going to be used, but it's going to be used against you. When you don't vote, that's a vote for the other side. You are still, when you don't vote, that vote is going to go against your interest. So instead of your vote being used in fraudulent and diabolical ways, use your vote. Because if you don't use it, it's still going to be used, but it's going to be used in a way that you don't want it to be used. It's going to be used to get someone else elected. Your no vote is going to get someone else elected. So whether you vote or you don't vote, your vote will still be used. Because that's true. Because, I mean, anytime, that's why the Republicans gerrymander. That's why they suppress the vote. Because they know if you vote, if you actually show up physically at the voting booths and vote in droves, they know they will not be elected. But if you do not vote, which is what they want you not to do, they don't want you to vote because they know if you vote, they know if you do not vote, that that's a vote for a Republican, someone who may just work against your own interests, do all these rotten things, take away this, take away that. They don't care if you're poor, if you're middle class. They don't give a damn about any of that. They know that you're not rich like they are. So they can't give you all those great tax cuts, and you cannot give millions of dollars to their campaign because you don't have anything. And they are going to vote against, they are going to work against you with your non-vote. So I've said this several times, use your vote. If you want your vote to be used in the right manner, then vote. Because if you do not vote, it's still going to be used. It's going to be used to elect someone who's going to work against your interests because you didn't use your vote. You vote, it's going to, if you vote, it's going to register. If you don't vote, it's also going to register that you didn't vote. And a no vote or nothing vote or a vote not casted, that works for the opposition side. So, and they hope you don't vote. They don't want you to vote. Because if liberals and progressives and people who are just plain old pissed off, you know, they're going to be voting their asses off, and the Republicans know it. They know, they think that come November 2018, that they are going to be wiped out. They are going to be wiped out of there. A lot of them are, some of them don't even care. They don't care if you don't, they don't care if they get their jobs back. They just, you know, want to throw 23 million people off health care. They just want to take away your Social Security benefits. They don't care. Well, I'm out of it. They didn't vote for me, but at least I did the right thing by throwing 23 million people off their Medicaid rolls. You know, so these people are just, and if you ever seen a photograph of Donald Trump and the Republicans all gathered for a photo op, you don't see any black people. You don't see any African Americans. You don't see any Asian people. You don't see any Hispanic people. It's just all white people, mostly old men that are taking this country to the sewer. And I've said this before, it is 320 million people in the United States, in America, 320 million. And it's only a few of these people in Congress, less than maybe 200 or 300. And I'm subtracting, when I say 200 or 300, I'm subtracting the Democrats in Congress. I'm talking about the House of Representatives, which there are 435 members. But if you subtract the Democrats, then you have maybe 213 Republicans in Congress. And this is what we're dealing with. 320 million people in the United States, to subtract those who are underage and cannot vote. But anyway, I guess what I'm getting at is that there are more of us than there are of them. So why are we letting these folks, these thugs, these liars, these manipulators, these guys who go around lying and spinning on television, politicians, why are we letting them ruin our lives? Why are we letting them ruin America? You know, if your representative in Congress will not act, then you have to act. We have to act. And I've said this 1,000 times, you cannot sit back and rely on someone else to fight your battles. You have to fight your own battles. This is Bernie Sanders is not going to fight your battles. Barack Obama is not going to fight your battles or anybody's battles. Maybe he don't even fight his own. You have to get out there and do your thing. A lot of people have said, a few people have said that they wished Obama would get out here and, you know, do something. Maybe he can be another Malcolm X or a Martin Luther King. No way. Not Obama. You're making me laugh. No, this guy is, he's got his millions and he'll say something once in a while. And then you don't hear from him no more. You know, I kind of was in that arena too. I thought maybe Obama would come out and just, you know, blast these guys, but he spent 8 years in Congress. I mean, 8 years in the White House, and you know, apparently they just ran right over him. But anyway, we are here where we are today, and the only thing we have, my guess is that Donald Trump will not be impeached. My guess is that Donald Trump is going to go on as president at least until the midterms. And if he does, then all we have to do, there's a possibility if we get rid of these Republican thugs by 2018, November 2018, we can put in a Democratic and independent Congress. These people will impeach Donald Trump. You want to see Donald Trump impeached? You want to see him out of office? Put Democrats in and independents, and he will be impeached. Impeachment doesn't mean that he's going to be thrown out of office. It's just a step in that direction. You know, it's a step in that direction, because to impeach a president, you got to have votes, a majority of votes in the House of Representatives and a majority of votes in the Senate. So, but impeachment is in the right direction. So, you know, so that this is what I think. I think Donald Trump is going to linger in his job at doing this. Of course, he's learning how to do the job. He's not going to admit it. He's not going to say it. But his surrogates, his people who go around lying for him and kissing his butt, these people are saying it. And I believe it, because I think Donald Trump is learning on the job. I think Donald Trump watches television a lot. This guy watches a lot of TV, and you know what he's doing? He's learning from TV. He's watching a lot of these political shows, these Sunday shows, and he's actually learning. A lot of these guys who come on these shows, they know that Donald Trump is watching. So they'll try to throw out some advice for him right on those shows. Well, Donald Trump, if you're watching, you should do this. Donald Trump, that's not kosher. Donald Trump, that's not American. Donald Trump, that's unconstitutional. Donald Trump, you know, they be throwing ideas and things that he should do, because Donald Trump doesn't know what he's doing. And he doesn't know what he's doing. The people in the White House, they don't know what the hell they are into. They're learning on the job, if they're learning anything at all. They're learning on the job. You know, so there you have it. So I do think that he's going to linger. He will be there. If he doesn't, I'll be surprised if he gets impeached, because he is being investigated. His lawyer was one of his legal team was going around on the Sunday talk show host and saying that he was not investigated. He was not being investigated. He was saying something that he wasn't sure of. He was saying directly that he was not being investigated. How can he say that Trump is not being investigated when Trump himself tweeted that he was being investigated? Trump said he was being investigated. Now you got people going around the media circuit saying that Trump is not being investigated. These lawyers, Trump's lawyers, are saying he's not being investigated. That's false. You know, even Donald Trump said he was being investigated. He tweeted several times he's being investigated. Then you get some hick lawyer coming on television, going around the media, making the media rounds on talk shows, saying that he's not being investigated. His own lawyer saying that he's not been investigated, while Donald Trump said he is being investigated. It's confusing. These people don't know what the hell they're talking about. They're lying through their teeth. They're trying to make a fool out of the millions and millions of people who are watching this crap, you know, and it's just dishonest. I mean, these people can't stop lying, or can't stop trying to pull the wool over our eyes. They really think we aren't stupid. I mean, they think we're so stupid that they can't see for themselves that they are the ones that are stupid. All right, you've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show, listening to me rant about this. I didn't plan on talking about this, but, you know, it's just awful that that's what's happening here. And the Republicans are, like I said, a lot of these guys, the Republicans in Congress, they are afraid that some of them are afraid that they are going to be wiped out in the 2018 midterm elections. And I'm hoping that they will. We have an election tomorrow, June the 20th in Georgia. And we've got, I forget this lady's name. I don't even care to mention her name because she said something on one of these television talk shows that I and a lot of people just hated. What she said was is that she did not, you might have heard it, what she said was is that she did not support a living wage. And she's running in a special election in Georgia against a Democrat. She's a Republican. What else is new, okay? And I was stunned when I heard that. It came right out of her own mouth. So this is not fake news. Nobody can say this is fake news because she said it herself. It's making the rounds in Georgia that she hasn't recanted. She hasn't apologized. She's sticking to what she said, that she doesn't support a living wage. And not just locally, but I'm thinking nationally. You know, she doesn't. She wants everybody to make. She rather for everybody to be making $7.25 an hour. A poverty wage. That's poverty. You can't get nowhere for $7.25 an hour. That's the federal minimum wage. How can you live on that? That's a poverty wage. But that's what she wants everybody to be making, which is ridiculous. And one of the things I can't understand is that she and the Democrat are tied. He's a few, I don't know, sand pebbles ahead of her, but virtually it is a dead heat. And I can't think of why. It's a dead heat. I mean, this woman just said she didn't support a living wage for anybody in the state of Georgia. Basically, she's saying you should, if you're poor, you should stay poor. It's better for our state. If you can't afford a decent apartment, if you can't afford a decent condo or a house, too bad. I don't support you making more money at your workplace. And this lady is, I can probably look up her name, but this lady is tied in the polls. As I've said before, the federal minimum wage is $7.25 an hour. Yeah. Mm-hmm. $7.25 an hour. Now, in the city of Chicago, I can't speak for other states, I'm pretty sure rents are high. In the city of Chicago, in some places, it's probably higher. In the city of Chicago, you cannot find a one-bedroom apartment or a two-bedroom apartment for under $1,000. You know, if you get a one-bedroom apartment in the city of Chicago, it's going to cost you $1,500 to $1,700 a month. A two-bedroom, it's going to be over $2,000 a month, close to two and a half. Now, this is an expensive town. You could never afford to live like that on $7.25 an hour, $7.25 an hour. It's ridiculous. And rents and taxes are going up, you know, every time I speak, every time I open my mouth, somebody's raising a tax in the city of Chicago. on people who can barely pay for their last taxes, the last tax that was raised. So it's tough. It is really tough out here. And I talk to my son every day about it. I said, Denver, it's expensive to live in the city of Chicago. It's expensive to live anywhere decent. So, you know, I'm going to help him out as much as I can in terms of finding good employment after high school. And hopefully he'll go on from there to college, you know, but it's tough. It's rough all over. It's tough. It's rough for everybody, you know, and I'm pulling for this Democrat in Georgia. And I want people to know that I am not a Democrat. I am not a Republican. I'm an independent. I may be leaning towards liberalism somewhat, but I am not a Democrat. Believe me, I look at both sides. I look at both parties and I criticize them where I see criticism is warranted. So, you know, but I see and I understand right from wrong. Okay. I understand. And I try to stand up, you know, when I see right going wrong. And it's a lot of right going wrong in America. It's just phenomenal how this country is just sinking. But if we get the right people in Congress, we can change a lot of things. We can start to rebuild again. But we have to get the right people in Congress. But we know that from this point on to November 18th, the Republicans are going to come up with all kinds of shenanigans to try to win. They can't win fairly. They are going to cheat. They are going to cheat their asses back into office if you don't get out there and try to suppress your vote. They're going to try to do everything to stop you from voting. They're going to come up with all kind of bull BS to try to stop you from voting. Don't listen to it. Vote. You know, they are going to try to come up with hell to stop you from voting. This gerrymandering thing, okay, it's done all over the place. The gerrymandering is nothing but these guys reshaping certain districts in the United States so they can win offices. That's cheating. I'm hearing that the Supreme Court is going to take up gerrymandering, you know, because the Republicans are hell on gerrymandering. Gerrymandering is just another way to say we're cheating. We want to stay in office. We want to get in office. We know that there's more Democrats out there than there are Republicans. We know that we are the 1%. They are the 99%ers. We are the 99%ers. They are right. It's more of us than there are of them. So why are we letting these guys, and you're letting these few people in Congress turn this whole country around? Just a few haters. It doesn't make sense. It really does. I'm not advocating going out here and doing any kind of chaos or rioting or damage or anything. I'm just saying use your vote. We don't need to be violent. Just use your vote and throw these people out. And in a way, this might be a good thing for people because the people who... This might be having the Republicans in office is awful. It's just terrible having them in office. But a lot of people have learned something. Their eyes have been open to the kinds of people they are, to the kinds of people they put in office. Their eyes are open. And Donald Trump and a lot of these Republicans, they have lost a lot of support of the people who put their butts in office. And they know that they are in trouble next year, 2018. They know it. So they are going to come out they're going to pull everything out of their back butts and try to cheat. Now, this election in Georgia tomorrow, if this woman wins this election, which she should not because she says she doesn't support a living wage, if she wins the election tomorrow, hopefully she will not, but if she does, it will be because of big money. The Republicans in Washington are pouring lots and lots and lots and lots of money into this race in Georgia. And I think that's the reason why it is tied. It is so close. I believe he's got 47.7% of the vote. She's got 47.2 or 3% of the vote. That's a dead heat. They're tied. And I believe the only reason why, two reasons I believe why she's tied is because of big money. And Georgia is a Republican state. It is a red state. You know, so those are two possibilities that she could win. And also Donald Trump is throwing his support behind her. You know, he's contacted her. And could happen. She could win, but other people out here, I'm hoping for an upset. Remember, this is a Republican state, and a lot of Republican voters are pissed off and upset at their congressmen, and they're upset at Donald Trump. So who knows? But it's a dead heat. But if you think about it, the Democrat in Georgia is slightly ahead, but not that much. It could go either way. Because virtually, it's a dead heat. But by points, he's about, you know, a percentage, a half a percentage ahead or to the point. But it's still a dead heat. It's 47-47. Put it that way if you round it off. Okay, 47% versus 47%. And I still don't know why she's ahead after making such a goofy statement that she doesn't support a minimum wage. That's crazy. You know, she doesn't support people making a living wage. I guess she wants everybody to be homeless because you cannot live on $7.25 an hour, $7.25 an hour. That's ridiculous. You've got people going to work every day in the state of Illinois. The minimum wage in the state of Illinois is $8.25 an hour, just a dollar above. But this monster we have, Bruce Rauner, he thinks that's too high. They're talking about raising the minimum wage in the state of Illinois, but Bruce Rauner doesn't want that. You know, but it's terrible when these Republicans do not want grassroots people to try to, you know, make something of themselves, pull themselves up by their bootstraps. That's awful when they do that. It's just awful. And, you know, just I'm hoping that this woman, I'm gonna have her name later because I can't recall or think of or remember too many names. I got so much on my mind. I'm doing so many things. But anyway, you've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio, and it's beautiful outside. This is internet radio, folks. You know, a lot of people have been, a few people, maybe more people will be doing it, contacting me saying that they want to get witty with me on my internet radio show. They want to get witty with me. Oh, George, I want to get witty with you. You should interview me. George, I can't wait to be on your show. I want to get witty with you. And I'm saying, what the hell are they talking about? And then it dawned on me. Oh, yeah, I know what they're talking about. And this guy, George, I want to get witty with you. I can be as witty as you want me to be. I'm going to talk about my book. And I'm saying, what are they talking about getting witty? I said, I didn't write that, did I? Then I figure it all out. The call letters for the George Wilder Jr. Show is WTT TTY. Those are the call letters. The George Wilder Jr. Show, broadcasting live in the city of Chicago, WTTTY, is now on the air. Obviously, one of those T's were were replaced with an I. Instead of WTTTY, it was WITTY. So that was a maybe a clerical mistake. You know, it happens. But but I did book them. You know, I did book them because they were saying the show was witty. But, you know, they just it was a clerical mistake. It was what it wasn't supposed to be WITTY. It was supposed to be WTTTY. Those are call letters for the show. I made them up, but I had to produce them. But that's what it is. But, you know, I don't I'm not going to hold no one to the fire for that. I think it was just an honest mistake. Actually, I just might start using witty. You know, who knows? Because a lot of people are out there are contacting this show because of it. Because of it. Anyway, all right. Always making the world a better place. At least that's what we're always trying to do here. The George Wilder Jr. Show is now on the air. Be nice to one another. It is so easy. It is so easy. It is very, very easy. You got people out here mean, nasty, rude. You know, they don't know what to do with themselves. They can be nice if they can try. You ever ran into somebody and they just had attitude written all over them? You know, you don't want to speak or say anything because you figure they're going to, if you try to speak or say anything, they might just curse you out just for the hell of it because they are in a bad mood. You know, so, you know, that's why I say be nice to one another. Okay. We got to stick together. Black, white, Hispanic, whatever. We have to stick together because, Americans have to stick together and put it that way. Americans have to stick together. We have to stick together, take back this country. It is up to us, the people of this country, to make this country great. Not Washington, D.C., not the Republicans, not the Democrats. It's up to the people because we put these assholes in those jobs. We give them their jobs. We give them their great health care. We give them the health care that they are trying to take away from us or they want to take away from us. Let's take their health care away by throwing them out of a job in 2018. And that's not too far away. 2018 will be here before you know it.
A week of bombshells, and it continues out of D.C.
Bullying is a slow and painful death. And probably someone you know right now is suffering in silence. Bullies and leaders, these are two things we
It's been firmly established. And for those that are regular viewers, we've talked about this with many medical experts, that there's a firm mind-body connection. Yes. To make a long story short, your stress levels go up, your cortisol levels go up. That can break down your immune system, lead to all kinds of health problems. And Kathy's talking about some of the physical discomforts. This is something we were talking about before the show, Lisa, that you've known people that have suffered the torment from being bullied in the workplace, and it did translate into sometimes very debilitating physical ailments.
Exactly. I was actually talking to an elementary teacher yesterday.
Wow.
She had been an elementary teacher for 22 years. And wow. She had been bullied right out of her job. And she is currently suffering with ovarian cancer. And she asked me if I thought that the cancer was related to the bullying. And I said to her, our bodies have a way of responding to the negativity in many ways, and that I would not be surprised if the stress associated with the bullying was connected in some way. Now, I don't have the medical evidence,
yes,
but I know that when you are being bullied in the workplace, it does affect you not only physically but mentally. I know of individuals who would literally vomit when they got to their workplaces because they couldn't handle the thought of going into the workplace. Even sadder is the fact that I have been talking to individuals who have considered suicide.
That's devastating.
So this is why it's so important to talk about this issue.
It's very important. Something else that Kathy said that I think it's something we all need to mourn for is the fact that people like Kathy at that time lost her entire mission as to what she was even working for. In this case, the children. There's so many jobs out there, and even the teacher that you're talking about, these are young kids in need of attention, in need of dedicated workers. So if you happen to be working at a job that requires sort of a mission as a focus to what you're doing, that could be something valuable lost in the middle of it, in the middle of the toxic environment of workplace bullying.
Exactly. And in my own situation, because the experience became so negative, so toxic, I began to, and I struggled to go to work. You know, I would drive a half an hour and I would just cry, you know, and just ask God, just give me the strength to make it through this day. But what kept me going was the fact that there were other individuals in the workplace who were suffering a lot more than I. And I began to turn my focus to those individuals, and so I tried to create a healthier
to
workplace.
To help them.
Yes.
Very positive.
Yes, because it's important for us to remain as positive as we can, and the only way that we can really do that is to make sure that we have a good support system. Our families, our friends, and also professional help is
and there's
necessary.
Also there are also some proactive measures that people can take that are being bullied, and that's something we also have to get to. But let's first go to Emily on line 4. Hello, Emily. You're on the line.
Hi.
Hi, Emily. Go ahead.
Okay, so I was going through workplace bullying for a year and a half, and as a result, I was actually fired, wrongfully dismissed. When I asked, am I actually being fired? And he said, yes. He could even tell me I was being fired. And I asked him why. He said, well, it's for the best of the two other people in this office. It was an office of 8 people. Like I said, a year and a half of bullying. It was a nonprofit organization where I was actually driven, and I'm a work-driven individual who enjoys helping others. So driving to work every day, singing, going on my way to work, it changed into actually I was terrified of going to work. I would actually have heart arrhythmias, which I'm having now as a result of that. Asthma attacks just came on me. I never took a sick day, and then all of a sudden became so ill.
Emily, how are you doing now? As a result of that experience, how did things resolve for you?
I had to take the lawyer. The lawyer told me, ma'am, you've got every reason that it shows here that they have not given you a reason. From everything that you've told me, you were wrongfully dismissed, and you have, as a result, you have a case here. As a result of that, they didn't even want to, in my record of employment, say that I was, they wanted to put fire without cause, which you don't even get E on.
Emily, did you eventually fight it, or are you in the process now?
Oh, yeah. No, the lawyer fought it for me because he was an expert in wrongful dismissal, mm-hmm. so he was able to fight it for me, get me a letter of a reference from the employer as well, making sure that it's positive, not only written, if someone were to call. That
this ended well for you, Emily?
At the point, I'm still looking for a job. I really don't want to use him as a reference.
Yes.
At the same time, it's I'm on EI. So the wrongful dismissal, it did help because I was able to actually, the unemployment office was actually able to contact them, even though the agreement was that they put reason for leaving Kate.
Emily, we're going to have to move along now because of the time issue, but I'm so glad that you called in. Obviously, Emily fought here.
Yes.
And it worked out. And Emily, I want to wish you all the best, and hopefully you'll pick up a job soon. But there's lots to talk about here again, and what people can do, because this is something that you address. For instance, even documenting when you're abused, the times, the events, in case something becomes worse. But I'm also curious on the severity of the abuse, because it can be slow and insidious. But then you get ones, like Sam, that was out of character, and it just happened suddenly. But at the same time, it really shakes you up, which leads to our discussion about workplace bullying. Dr. Lisa Barrow is with me. You heard about this wrongful dismissal case just before the break. And unfortunately, you were telling me during the break that this is happening and it's something that's ongoing. But my biggest concern here is we're living in harsh economic times. So does this put victims and even potential victims more in a very negative position of putting up with a bully in some cases for fear of losing their job and having to be left out in the cold in such an economy?
Yes, definitely with the economy the way that it is, people are not, well, they haven't been overly open about bullying to begin with. They're not going to want to put themselves in a situation where the bully, especially if the bully is his or her boss, in a situation where the person can be fired or terminated because the organization is downsizing.
Okay. You know,
and so a lot of individuals do end up losing their jobs, and it's couched under, well, downsizing or restructuring, what have you. And so this is why it's important for laws to be passed to protect employees from bullies in the workplace so that employees know that they have some recourse.
Now, this is leading up to something very important that we're going to be discussing very shortly. And that is, though, if you live in Ontario, because Bill 168, and you pointed this out to me, Lisa, Bill 168 is being discussed right now. And you're actually giving a presentation about it, or have you done so already?
My plan is
to give a presentation
next week.
It's open to public hearings, so next week.
Yes.
Okay, so we're going to be telling you more about this bill shortly, but first, let's go to Romeo on line 5. Hello, Romeo, you're on the line.
Christine, I have noticed over the years that people have been coming up with complicated answers to simple questions, to simple problems.
Okay, go ahead, Romeo.
What you need to do, you approach the manager or the supervisor, not as an enemy, but in a friendly way, and to say that sir or whoever.
We're going to be telling you more about this. The polite approach can go a long way, and I have heard it in the past that when you confront the bully in a polite way, sometimes it goes away, but not always, Romeo. And I'll give you a quick story before we go back to Lisa about this. Years and years ago, now we're looking at a lot of years ago, at least maybe 18 years ago, and this happened at Concordia University. My uncle was shot at Concordia. He happened to be in the wrong department, visiting the dean at the time, wrong place at the wrong time. But this man, Fabricant, who's still in jail, he was actually one of the biggest bullies. He was upset as to how he said the university was treating him. So what he did is that he kept on threatening coworkers. He was threatening the dean. And one day he snapped and he just started shooting people like crazy. My uncle wasn't even working in that particular department. He was a civil engineer, another type of an engineer. But this is just a case of how workplace violence and bullying can get. We weren't dealing with a person here who would deal with reason, who would listen to reason. This was a person that was terrorizing that community for a long time. And unfortunately, that's sometimes the case, Lisa. This Sam, for example, and I'm not remotely comparing Sam in Lisa's book to Fabricant, but this man snapped and he just held you like a serpent and just wrapped his arm around you and shook you basically because he happened to lose control of himself at that time. There are people with a temper, people who snap, people who get violent and terrorize people. And if you can just give us a couple of comments about that, what do you do about this kind of a bully?
Well, first of all, approaching a person
politely is the way to go. Is the number one way to go.
It's the right way to.
Yes.
You know, you want to talk to the person because maybe there's a misunderstanding. I'm a firm believer. You give people the benefit of the doubt. But if you notice that the behavior continues, then obviously you may want to begin to document the situation, talk to human resources,
yes.
Talk to the person's boss. But we can't predict how people will respond.
All righty. Okay. All right. Did we lose it? Okay. We're going to do this. We will be right back.
The George Wilder Jr. Show is now on the air. It is all about making the world a better place. Join me.
Yeah, I wanted to say something about workplace bullying, the what you've just got through hearing before the music. I wanted to say something about it because I have, you know, I've been on the earth a long time so far, and I have throughout my life, I've had, you know, I'm just like so many guests that come on my show. I also have my own personal experiences with bullying in the workplace. It happens. It's happening right now. Somebody is being pushed around by a pushy boss, a boss that is an asshole, or manager. It's a phenomenon. It's in the workplace. You know, I mean, you got some. I've talked about this before. There are some great bosses in the workplace. I mean, I had a few that I was proud to work for and to work with. And, you know, but then I've had some really, really assholes. I mean, I'll never forget one. It was this one guy. His name was Daryl. And this guy, I mean, he just was such a mean son of a gun. I mean, this guy was just mean. You know, this was a ton of years ago. So, but he was just mean. You know, he was just not just to me, but to every employee there, everybody that was under him. He disrespected you, always looking and leaning over your shoulder. This guy smothered you, came around, looked. He made you nervous. He didn't make me nervous. I was, you know, he didn't make me nervous. At some point, he seemed like he sort of liked me, you know, and in a friendly way, in a friendly manner, as an employee, he liked me in that way, that kind of way. And, you know, but I didn't like him. Okay. I thought he was an asshole, and I showed him, and I showed the guy, I couldn't take it. A lot of people just, you know, take what he gave out, but I just couldn't take it because, you know, people were telling me, George, you can't talk back. You can't do this. You can't say anything. He was a guy who liked to fire people, like Donald Trump, who he loved firing people. And they would just say, George, you got to be cool. You got to do your job. I say, I am doing my job. I don't need this guy staring at me for 10 minutes looking mean and vicious. You know, I'm doing my job and I'm doing it to the best of my ability. I got no complaints. My work record is clean. You know, my evaluations are good. So why is this guy staring at me like he hates my guts, you know, and I haven't done a damn thing to him? But George, he's a supervisor. He's your boss. You got to do you. And I just couldn't do it. I just couldn't bend over and let this guy kick me. So I got tired of this guy staring at me and looking over my shoulder, and it wasn't my work. It wasn't my work that he was concerned with. It was just that I wasn't one of the guys who were going to kiss his ass, and I wasn't. And for that, he fired me. Okay. But, you know, in a way it was good for me because I didn't like the environment. I didn't like what he was doing. And you got bosses like that in the workplace who hover over you, look at you like you're the scum of the earth. I didn't like any of that because I know I was doing a good job. A lot of supervisors and bosses, you know, they know that you need your job. They know that you have a family to feed and you have a car to pay for. You have a mortgage. They know that you need your job. And that's why some of these guys try to get away with treating you as worse as possible. And some of these jobs, you know, you go home every night, you're stressed out. You wonder if you're going to have your job the next morning. Will you be replaced? You know, things like that. Because it was another particular job. I was so stressed out from the BS that was going around in the workplace. It had nothing to do with work performance. With work performance, it had everything to do with people wanting to get in your business. They want to control you. They want to, they just feel like just kicking somebody. And you just happen to be there. So I know a little bit about bullying and BS in the workplace and bad, bad supervisors and managers. You know, but then again, I know a lot about good supervisors and good managers because I've worked for both. But now I don't work for neither one and I'm happy with that. But, you know, during my life and sometimes in my life, I came across people like this. And, you know, I was fired from this particular job because I wasn't about to kiss nobody's ass for a job that I didn't think I needed to do that. And I was out of there. He fired me because I didn't do that. And I wasn't going to do that, even though a lot of other people were doing it. And I was warned I better do it. I said, no, I can't do that. I'm sorry. I can't do that. There's more than one job out there. I mean, there's a lot of places out there that could hire me. I'm very skillful. I've got a lot of experience in doing this job. I'm not going to stay here and just take a lot of this garbage. And that's a shame because a lot of companies, they lose a lot of great employees for treating them like garbage. You know, I mean, you don't treat anybody like garbage. You come in, into your workplace. You don't do that. You don't do it. I've been a supervisor two or three times in my life, maybe more, at some of these jobs. And I never treated an employee as if they were not worthy, you know. Because if an employee needed help at something they were doing, hey, I was right there. But you got some supervisors who abuse the little power that they have over you. And they're running back and telling the manager, you know. And the manager is going to believe everything that the supervisors say. You know, so because the manager is the person, basically, are the person who... Well, human resources, management, whatever, they hire you. Then they put you in the realm of a supervisor. And, you know, they're going to believe everything their supervisor tells them, even if their supervisor is lying. You know, because they're going to trust their manager over what the manager say than what you may say about that. About that supervisor. So, you know, so it is real. Workplace bullying, workplace taunting from a supervisor or a manager is real. It is so real. I mean, in some of these workplaces, they treat you like you're a damn slave. You know, you're a slave. You know, you got some potty mouth supervisor, you know, walking all over the place. You got people who micromanage and looking all over your damn shoulder while you're working. And then they're threatening to fire you, giving you all kinds of stress. I mean, this particular job, I used to hate. I mean, I would get stressed out just going in every morning. I said, oh, damn it. Why do I have to come here? You know, if it's not my supervisors or my supervisor, it was the clients that came through the door. They had issues, lots of issues, and that stretched you out itself. However, my coworkers, I think they were some of the greatest in the world at some jobs, but it was just the supervisor, especially if you're doing a great job. If you do a great job, oh, wow. They're going to think you need your job and they're going to start treating you like garbage, you know, and it's sad that some of these guys get away with that. And it's also sad that if they're treating their best employees like garbage and that employee quits, they have lost some skilled labor and that could affect the bottom line on the company. A lot of these mean ass, ornery ass supervisors, fail to realize that, but they feel that they have to kick you in the butt because that's their job to do that. They were hired by management to do that, you know, but that's the wrong way to go. But like I said before, there are some great supervisors out there. There are some beautiful supervisors. I have for a few during my lifetime, and I have worked for a few assholes. And I'm going to say assholes because that's what the hell they were. And I always felt that I didn't need to kiss nobody's ass to work at a job. I wasn't about to do that. Oh, you just lying, George. No, I'm not. No, I'm not. I never felt I had to do that. And I did not do that. I did my job to the best of my ability at every job that I ever had. They appreciated it. But some jobs I had an asshole supervisor just waiting to pick on somebody. You know, waiting for a chance to fire you just because firing someone made that particular supervisor feel good when he fired somebody. Suddenly, HR, management, they got to look around for other people to hire. And then he goes and fires them. It was like a cycle with this guy. It was like a cycle, you know, going around. It was like a revolving door. Every time somebody get hired, come through that door and they're hired and start working, if he didn't like them, if you looked at him wrong, if you looked at his feet, and if you didn't smile when he wanted you to smile, you were out of there. Period. It doesn't matter what you did. You didn't do anything. You did your job. He just didn't like the way you looked at him. And I used to look at him like I used to roll my eyes. And the minute I rolled my eyes, I was fired. But still in all, you know, at that particular job, it didn't bother me because I found another one immediately. But the point here is, folks, bullying in the workplace exists. It exists. And if you are being bullied, you have to get out of the situation some way. Some people say if you're being bullied in the workplace, quit. But some people cannot quit. You just cannot get up and quit a job where that you need, that is paying you pretty well in order for you to live a decent life. I mean, you got, you know, car notes, you got bills, you got light, you got everything. You got all kinds of bills, parking tickets, maybe. You have a home, you have a car note, you know, you sending your kids to college or whatever. You just can't get up and quit like you want to. So, you know, what do? But this guy, some people said, well, George, try to go, or anybody, try to go and have a decent conversation with this guy. Try to tell her or him that how you feel about it. Tell him that you don't like being bullying. You don't like being smothered. You don't like to being talked about and rumored around in the workplace. You might still get fired, but at least you got your point across. All right, you've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on George Wilder Jr. Show. Follow me on Facebook. Did I say that twice? Follow me on Facebook, Instagram. Click the follow button right here. It's right here. Okay, and I'm on Instagram. But you know what? The number one social website is Facebook. And I just learned that Amazon has bought and purchased Whole Foods. Wow. Amazon has bought and purchased Whole Foods. We have a Whole Foods right around the corner from my studio here. I'm in the city of Chicago on the north side near the lake, hopefully away from the gunfire. Hopefully. Yeah, Amazon is the elephant in the room here. You know, Amazon is has published a lot of my books, and I'm hoping that I can find my books, or that other people can find my books, can buy my books at Whole Foods, you know. And everybody knows Whole Foods to be an expensive store and a health food store, but that's garbage. I think any store can be a health food store. I think Aldi's can be a health food store. You just got to go in there and buy food that's healthy, right? So, yeah, I have a Whole Foods right around the corner, What was I going to say? Yeah, Whole Foods being owned by Amazon, I'm hearing that the prices will be lowered because we know that Whole Foods is a very expensive store. You walk in there, I mean, you got to have a pocket full of money. You know that Whole Foods generally was. I'm going to say was because Amazon owns Whole Foods now. And my understanding is that Whole Foods prices will be coming down And if that's true, then that's going to be a lot of competition for Aldi's. Aldi's, these stores around here, franchises, I'm thinking they're, some of them are franchises. They are cleaning up. They are racking up the sales. Aldi's are racking up the sales. Some people used to think Aldi's, it was a store for low-income people. It is not. All incomes go to Aldi's. Now, I'm not going to say Aldi has the most greatest, freshest food in the world, but all incomes from every walk of life go to Aldi's. All right, we're going to be right back, folks. Let's do this.
Sunday, President Trump promised to change Washington, but is it possible Washington is changing him?
This is more work than in my previous life. I thought it would be easier.
The president fights to meet a 100-day deadline he calls ridiculous, with an outline on taxes.
We are going to cut taxes and simplify the tax code.
That faces stiff opposition. Another attempt to repeal and replace Obamacare.
We think it's a really good step in the right direction.
That is still short on votes. And a promise to kill NAFTA.
We are going to get rid of NAFTA for once and for all.
That turns into a decision to negotiate instead. Last night, the president took a victory lap in a campaign-style stop in Pennsylvania.
We are keeping one promise after another.
This morning, I'll talk exclusively with the Vice President, Mike Pence, who joins me here live. Plus two senators from opposite sides of the aisle on what it would take for our two parties to finally work together. Angus King and Susan Collins of Maine are here live. And winners and losers, what President Trump's tax outline really could mean for the people who support him the most. Joining me for insight and analysis are Chris Matthews, host of Hardball on MSNBC, Helene Cooper, Pentagon correspondent for The New York Times, NBC News political analyst Nicole Wallace, and Danielle Pletka of the American Enterprise Institute. Welcome to Sunday. It's Meet the Press.
From NBC News in Washington, the longest-running show in television history, celebrating its 70th year, this is Meet the Press with Chuck Todd.
Good Sunday morning for a president who said the first 100 days is a ridiculous benchmark. President Trump this week certainly looked like a man eager to cross the finish line with some victories. But despite this week's flurry of activity on taxes, on health care, on NAFTA, the president has struggled to put some big legislative points on the board. He has won the confirmation of Neil Gorsuch to the Supreme Court, rolled back quite a few business and environmental regulations, and he has stayed true to his promise to restrict immigration. But in what may be the most revealing moment of the week, the Republican House rejected his call for a $1 billion down payment for the wall with Mexico. Like many presidents before him, President Trump came to town promising to defeat Washington. And like many presidents before him, he's discovering that the Washington Empire knows how to strike back.
We are keeping one promise after another, and frankly, the people are really happy about it.
In Harrisburg, Pennsylvania last night, the president marked 100 days in office in his favorite element.
We're going to have the wall. Don't worry about it. Major tax relief for the middle class. We're going to get the premiums down. We're going to get the deductibles way down. We're going to take care of every single need you're going to want to have taken care of, but it's not going to cost that kind of money.
It's a stark contrast to this admission earlier in the week.
This is more work than in my previous life. I thought it would be easier.
The 100-day honeymoon is regarded, politically at least, as the easiest part of a president's job. On the campaign trail, governing looked easy.
So a lot of politicians said, you can't get Mexico to pay for the wall. I said, oh, it's going to be so easy.
You're going to have such great health care at a tiny fraction of the cost, and it's going to be so easy.
Presidential's easy.
But of the 10 major pieces of legislation Mr. Trump promised in his contract with the American voter, none have been accomplished. If Mr. Trump is still battling Washington, then Washington appears to be winning. Healthcare is stalled for the second time in the House.
I'm disappointed. I'll tell you, Paul Ryan's trying very, very hard.
The president's plan to overhaul thousands of pages of the federal tax code? So far, just a single sheet of paper.
We will let you know these specific details at the appropriate moment. A White House demand to include a down payment for a border wall in any spending bill dropped.
Build the wall!
We'll build the wall.
After promising to terminate NAFTA, instead on Saturday, Mr. Trump signed an executive order which simply launches a six-month review. Mr. Trump railed against so-called globalists during the campaign.
Hillary Clinton is the chief emissary for globalism. Wants to surrender America to globalism. A representative for globalists. You know what globalists are?
But this week, he called himself one, telling the Wall Street Journal, hey, I'm a nationalist and a globalist. And then there's the Russia investigation. It continues to hang over this presidency, with new questions this week about former National Security Advisor Mike Flynn.
When they say we didn't vet, well, Obama, I guess, didn't vet, because he was approved at the highest level of security by the Obama administration.
Well, we got a lot to get to, so no better person to talk to than my next guest, the Vice President of the United States, Mike Pence. Welcome back, sir.
Great. Good to see you, Chuck. Thanks.
Good to see you. Happy day 101.
Thank you.
The president made that remark that this was more work than in his previous life, and he thought it would be easier. What has the president found harder than he expected so far?
Well, I don't know that he's found it harder. I think he has found the range of issues as president of the United States at home and abroad, given the path of the last administration, to be particularly challenging. In so many ways, as the president has said, the world is a mess. He spent an awful lot of time in the first 100 days re-engaging the world. He sent many of us around the globe to re-engage with our allies and to strengthen America's ties around the world. We're rebuilding our military. We're rethinking trade agreements that have been costing American jobs. And then here at home, you know, the president has rolled his sleeves up, literally not just 100 days, Chuck, but since the day after the election, the president has been out there fighting for American jobs. And in 2017 alone, more than 500,000 jobs have been created. You see optimism among job creators in America, enthusiasm among consumers across the country. I think we went through a difficult time the last 8 years, but America's back under President Donald Trump.
But in many ways, he's found himself, it's almost like Washington has either moved him or has defeated him so far. Would you accept that? I mean, you look at his positions on NATO or even the pullback on NAFTA a little bit, what he has said about China. It's all fallen into the Washington conventional wisdom.
Oh, I don't really share your perspective on that, with all due respect, Chuck.
Nope.
I mean, on the international scene, here's a president who said that NATO had to change, that our NATO allies had to begin to step up, to begin to share the burden of the cost of our common defense. And they are. They're also changing the mission of NATO to focus more on terrorism. That's exactly what the president called for. He didn't change on NATO. NATO changed.
But NATO changed years ago. Yeah. NATO's been at the forefront in Afghanistan fighting terrorism. NATO, he's not the first president to complain that the rest of the NATO nations don't pay their fair share.
Well, most of them don't. The president's going to be visiting NATO in just a couple of weeks, and he'll deliver that strong message again. And I know the Secretary General is standing shoulder to shoulder with him. But I think you look at what this president has done. Come to Washington, D.C. to fight for the forgotten men and women of this country, and they see him doing it each and every day. I mean, he announced this week that we're going to renegotiate NAFTA. In the early days of the administration, we got out of the Trans-Pacific Partnership, which, as the president said, would have made NAFTA's failures pale in comparison. I mean, he literally each and every day has been out there fighting to keep his word to the American people, and he's frankly been fighting, you know, against the gale force wind of the establishment here in Washington, D.C., and frankly, you know, fighting against the gale force wind of many in the national media who would constantly like to change the subject away from the president's relentless effort to keep his promises to the American people.
One of the big promises had to do with a ton of legislative action, and I want to put on the board, he called, these are the pieces of legislation he promised to at least introduce and begin fighting for. No one said he was going to sign all of this. That I will give you. Tax reform, offshoring jobs, infrastructure, school choice, health care, child care, immigration, ethics reform, military and crime and drugs. The only place where there's been any action actually in Congress is really on health care. So what's taken so long getting these other aspects introduced, or was it an overpromise?
Well, no, was it an overpromise? And remember, this president has already signed more bills in the first 100 days than any president since Harry Truman. I mean, he's literally 13 different pieces of legislation that have rolled back job-killing regulations from the Obama administration signed into law, and he's taken executive action.
We're not on health care, and we're not on tax reform. I mean, I'm talking, I'm talking to the big signature pieces of legislation.
But he's signed over 30 different executive orders on virtually every one of those topics that you just referred to, and we're working with the Congress. I think health care reform, repealing and replacing Obamacare, is just around the corner, because this president is driving relentlessly toward an agenda to make America great again. And I got to tell you, when we were out visiting a factory yesterday near Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, you saw the big crowds, the thunderous crowds, the overwhelming support the president enjoys, virtually unanimous support among the people that supported us in last fall's election. But what was more inspiring to me even was as we walked the shoproom floor, not just the business owners expressing enthusiasm for the president's plan to cut business taxes and cut taxes across the board, but the guys that had paused from working on the line to reach out to this president and just thank him for being there. You know, somebody said to me recently that everybody that puts on a steel-toed boot in this country knows they've got somebody fighting for them every day, and it's absolutely true, and it's President Donald Trump.
All right, let's get out of atmospherics. Let's get into some details. We were talking about health care a little bit. I know you've been working hard on this. You've been in many ways back and forth. People see you ducking into different congressional offices, doing negotiations, having to do, and one of them has to do with this so-called MacArthur Amendment that some moderates on the Republican side are concerned about. Let me play for you some sound of that and get you to respond.
I wouldn't be surprised if they pass something, but I'm not for it. I'm just telling you.
It could affect people with pre-existing conditions, and that it'll make insurance probably much more expensive for them and in some cases perhaps inaccessible.
It doesn't help the people I represent.
You've heard this concern, which is that if you essentially eliminate these essential benefits, you give the states the opportunity to essentially take out the protection for pre-existing conditions, or if you do keep it, making it so that those folks are guaranteed to be paying a lot more for health insurance. And if that's the case, how do you pass this thing?
Well, first, before I get to that, let's begin with the fact that Obamacare has failed. I mean, it literally is collapsing all over the country. Insurance companies are fleeing
from the exchanges. Not a lot of folks agree with you on that. That is a very debatable point,
well,
Mr. Vice President.
Not on the facts.
But let's go. I'd like to get into the
legislation. States around the country where literally people in half of the state have no choice for health insurance at all. People have seen their insurance premiums skyrocket. The American people know that we need to repeal and replace Obamacare. And President Trump, from the first day of this administration, has been working every single day to keep that promise to the American people. And I have to tell you, the legislative process is often slow. Right. Nobody knows it better than you.
yourself, you remember Congress.
What's the old saying? If you like sausage, don't go where they make it, right? And we're making law here, and we're unmaking one of the worst pieces of legislation in modern American history. And on this point, you know, Congress obviously wasn't ready to begin the process of repealing Obamacare a little more than a month ago, but I think we're close. And it is owing to the fact that you're seeing members of Congress coming together to repeal the onerous taxes and penalties that people pay if they don't have insurance in Obamacare, to expand health savings accounts, to give governors like my friend John Kasich the ability to have all new flexibility to improve Medicaid for their most vulnerable citizens. But we're also keeping our promises to protect people who have pre-existing conditions.
But besides protecting them, are you going to be able to prevent their premiums from skyrocketing? That's been the concern, that if you isolate them into risk pools, that the inevitable impact is the rise in premiums. How do you protect that?
Well, I think the way you protect that is, first and foremost, you make it very clear, as we did in the first bill, but with the amendments that have taken place in the last several weeks and come forward, it's even better still, that we're basically borrowing an idea from the state of Maine that has seen a significant drop in premiums. for people on their health insurance, because you take people that have pre-existing and costly conditions and put them into a high-risk pool, and you subsidize that so that it is affordable to those individuals. And so you're guaranteeing coverage for pre-existing conditions. And the flexibility that you're referring to in this latest MacArthur Amendment, states can only apply for that waiver and flexibility if they have either a federal or state high-risk pool that guarantees that people will be able to have coverage and it'll be affordable.
By the way, terrific segue. I have two Maine senators coming on the show later today. I will ask Senator Susan Collins about that Maine risk pool. I'm going to go to taxes here a minute. By the way, on health care, I know the president expects a House vote in the next couple of weeks. You're going to be able to sign a new version of health care, whether it's full repeal or replace or not, by the end of this year?
I believe through a series of bills, this first one, that we're hopeful there'll be action in the House of Representatives soon, and through executive action and through further legislation, that will deliver on our promise to repeal and replace Obamacare and give the American people the kind of world-class health care they deserve.
For the end of the year? Not making that promise?
I hope before the end of the year. Look, again, I go back to the first point, Chuck. I know you say it's debatable. Get out across the country. Obamacare has failed. Every promise of Obamacare has been broken. Premiums have skyrocketed. People have lost their insurance, lost the ability to choose their doctors. We've got to do better. We will under President Trump.
I want to ask you on tax reform. A lot of estimates, and look, we're very early in this process, and I am well aware. I'm not going to get into too many of the weeds, but the overall impact looks like a big shot at the deficit. Some people estimate as high as $7 trillion over 10 years, as small as $3 trillion. Let me ask you this. How important is deficit reduction? If this tax reform plan increases the deficit, will the president still sign it?
We have nearly a $20 trillion national debt that doubled under the last administration. It didn't just double because of excessive government spending. It doubled because of a struggling American economy. And we just got the numbers, 1.6%, the strongest economy on earth, growing at less than 2%, and in less than 1% in the first quarter. Look, all of those statistics, and talking with everyday Americans and job creators across this country, attest to the fact that the American people are crying out for tax relief. We have one of the highest corporate tax rates in the world. The president.
All right. All right. Welcome to the George Wilder Jr. Show, making the world a better place, one show at a time. And we are now on the air. We got about maybe three more minutes left into the show. Wow, how time goes fast, folks. I hope you was able to hear the last person, the guest on the show. Sometimes a person speaks low or whatever. You have to adjust your volume and stuff like that. Anyway, it's been great. It's been wonderful. Thanks for listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show. And I hope you guys join me tomorrow. We have a wonderful guest tomorrow. And that should always be fun. All right, you guys take care of yourself. Thank you for listening. I hope you join me tomorrow.
Heaven help the child who never had a home. Heaven help the girl who walks the streets alone. Heaven help the roses if the bombs begin to fall. Heaven never saw. Heaven help the black man if he struggles one more day. Heaven help the white man if he turns back away. Heaven help the man who kicks the man in his claw. Heaven help us all.
I lay me down before I go to sleep. In a troubled world, I pray the Lord to keep. Keep hatred from the mighty and the mighty from the small.
It's going to be more fun, more guests, and more surprises. Bye-bye, everybody. Take care.